Just to kind of put this in context, what I'm going to talk about is spontaneous evacuation. And that's kind of a very important distinction because after Katrina, we tend to think now about evacuation as the government bringing in buses, helping the vulnerable populations leave, which is critically important. But even in Katrina and all disasters, the vast majority of people evacuate on their own in their own vehicles. And that's really what we're looking at here, because those are the people you don't know where they go. Again, where do they go, and what are the implications for the reception communities? Best example of this historically was Three Mile Island. Three Mile Island, there was an evacuation of a one-mile radius, 3,500 people, 144,000 people got in their vehicles, traveled all over the country. The median distance, depending on what study you look at, ranged somewhere between 85 miles and 111 miles, but people traveled all over the country. Virtually none went to the shelter, which is another thing that shelters tend to be the destination of last resort. The questions that we had in doing some of this work was what might happen today in a post-9/11 world, post-Katrina with a 24-hour news cycle. These things, of course, weren't the case back in 1979. Real briefly, I want to go through a little bit of the research that we used to develop this tool. The Walsh Center for Rural Health Analysis is funded by HRSA's Office of Rural Health Policy. We did key informant interviews and a national survey. I'm going to present to you the national survey results. All of the findings can be found on our website in policy briefs. Right now, the policy brief on the key informant interviews is up. The policy brief on the national survey was just approved by the federal government and will be up on the website hopefully within the next few weeks, so be on the lookout for that. Skip that. Here's the survey, and let me just tell you what you're looking at, and then I'm going to skip through these pretty quickly. But what we did is we did a national survey of urban residents, 1,505 urban residents, representative sample around the country, and we asked them, are you likely to evacuate or not likely to evacuate under different levels of external influence? And we asked them for both a dirty bomb scenario and a pandemic influenza scenario. So if you look on the bottom there, that's the different levels of influence. It ranges from the government telling people not to evacuate on up to the government ordering an evacuation. As you'd expect, the greater the level of external influence, the more likely people are to evacuate. What's particularly interesting here, though, are the extremes. When the government orders an evacuation, and again, this is kind of a worst-case scenario, dirty bomb-type scenario, still 7% of the people say they're not going to evacuate. No matter what the scenario, there are people who are never going to evacuate. On the flip side, what's particularly interesting to us is that when the government tells people not to evacuate, almost 40% of the people still say they're going to self-evacuate, spontaneous evacuation. If that concerns you, pandemic flu should concern you more. While the numbers aren't quite as high, 27% of the people tell us that they still intend to spontaneously evacuate in a pandemic influenza scenario. Again, this is a scenario where the government orders will most likely be to shelter in place, but people tell us that they are more likely, or 27% are likely to spontaneously evacuate, to move on their own. One thing that I didn't put up here is that if you frame the question differently, instead of telling people not to evacuate, if you tell them to shelter in place, it actually reduces it from 27% to 17%. So there's a very important risk communications message there. But still, 17% of people moving in a pandemic influenza scenario is not what we want to see. Asking them where they plan to go, 55% tell us they plan to go to a rural destination. The predictor of this is where your family lives. About 85% of people go to family. Urban and rural communities are interconnected. And that's really the lesson here. Interestingly, when you think about this, I'll show you the distance here. About half of the people, a little more than half, say they're going to stay within 150 miles. About 30% say they're going to go more than 250 miles. What's interesting is if you think about a 150-mile circle around any urban area, you may have one or two other urban areas. That's where, again, if you go back, that's where roughly 35-40% of the people are going to go. So there's kind of a critical mass. You have large numbers going to the other urban areas, but you actually, more of the people disperse widely throughout those rural areas. Again, fewer people dispersed across these rural communities. And what's important to think about here is that if you're a community of 10,000 and 2,000 people show up, you just had a 20% population increase. If you're a city of 1 million and 20,000 people show up, you just had a 2% population increase. So you need to think about it in terms of what are the capacities of these communities to absorb those evacuees. Okay, now I want to get into the modeling tool a little bit. This is funded through the Western New York Public Health Alliance. CDC funds the Advanced Practice Center program. It's a competitive grant program to local health departments around the country. We're working with Western New York on this. And the project purpose really is to develop a map-based tool to predict community population surge. And we want to include number of evacuees, evacuee information, and local planning information. I'll show you all that in the prototype of the tool that we've developed. But kind of the most important slide that I'll show you in terms of the tool itself is how it operates here. There are really three kinds of variables that are built into the modeling. The first is the scenario-specific variables. The current scenarios in the prototype are dirty bomb, pandemic flu, and an industrial accident. Each of those has a different amount of what we call push. So it'll force a different raw number of people to evacuate, or a proportion of the population to evacuate. So that's kind of the beginning number, is how many people are evacuating. That'll vary by scenario. Next, we look at the demographics of the population based on a lot of survey data, our own and other surveys that have been done, as well as some historical information. We know that some populations are more or less likely to evacuate. People with children are more likely to evacuate. The elderly, people with disabilities are less likely to evacuate. We can look at the population demographics and know, to some extent, who is more or less likely to evacuate. That helps us refine that number who's evacuating. And then the part that I think is very innovative and really hasn't been done before is what we call the pull variables, which is looking at all of the potential destination communities and what makes them more or less attractive to evacuees. So things like road networks in and out of the county, family networks, which we've had to develop proxies for, number of hotel rooms, number of second homes, things like that are attraction features that will make a county more or less attractive. So kind of in summary, certain number of the population evacuates. That depends on the scenario. The composition doesn't represent the general population, but it'll reflect the likelihood among that subpopulation to evacuate, and then the destinations depend on the attractiveness of the counties. In terms of setting the variables, this is kind of a limitation of our product, but also I think what will allow us to expand it nationally, which we're currently doing. We've really relied on national data sources, which is a limitation, honestly. There are actually some local and state-level data sources that may be better and may allow us to refine this more, but then we can't expand it nationally as easily. So we've limited this to Bureau of Labor Statistics data, Census Bureau data, and Smith Travel Research data, which provides us hotel information. And then, again, the variables have been set with historical studies, survey research, and where all else fails, expert opinion. We've tried to make it as defensible as possible. So again, walking you through the tool, this is what the opening page will look like. For the most part, we're changing it a little bit. The dots you see were envisioned as kind of the active links in terms of every urban area having an active version of the tool. We're changing these urban areas, though. This was a list of the largest 100 cities in the country. That has some problems. We're changing it to a list called the 133 Cities Initiative. Some of you may be familiar with that. Most people aren't, remarkably. But this is something that dates back to the mid-90s, where the federal government tried to determine the 133 cities in the United States that were most vulnerable to natural and man-made disasters, terrorism. So again, it's kind of the perfect list for us to go by. It also includes every state capital, so that we will have every state in the new version. So right now, the only active link, and this is on the web, the only active link is Buffalo, New York, where we did the pilot. You click on Buffalo, it brings up the regional map. This is currently being expanded to 150-mile radius, which is the other improvement that we're making to the tool. You look at on the right side, you have these different data overlays that you can click on and off. Again, this will give you an idea of where 150 miles will take you. But for example, we put onto this version hospital overlays, where you not only get the GIS-coded locations of the hospitals, but as you scroll over the hospital symbol, you get some information about the facilities. We're looking at other overlays to add. It's really limitless what we can do with this. This is really how it works. From the right side, you drop down the scroll down menu to select a scenario, in this case pandemic flu. It changes the gradient of the map to show you the proportion of evacuees relative to population. And then as you scroll over the county, it tells you the raw number of evacuees that that county is predicted to get, as well as when you click on it, you get these two boxes. On the left side is planning information. On the right side is population demographics, in this case age breakdown. We're also going to be adding number of children, things like that. We're also planning on adding health department information, a lot of different things into the planning information as well. But this is real information for these communities. And then in terms of next steps, Again, I mentioned we're expanding this nationally. It'll be to the 133 urban centers, 150-mile radius around them. We're refining the algorithms and variables to be able to do that for each of those individual cities. And then we're going to be doing user testing towards the end of the year to make sure that it's both usable and has utility for the preparedness community, which is really the user audience we anticipate. And then a few things kind of just to put in plugs for what we're thinking about doing with this. We want to develop a training component around this. We are looking at developing some planning guidelines for rural communities. None currently exist. Right now, there's been virtually no guidance for rural communities on what to do should they receive evacuees. We want to kind of develop those planning guidelines and then create a training that incorporates the tool for each specific rural community. And then the other thing that we want to do is we want to turn this on its ear and look at the urban community, which is really, I think, a really interesting component of this. By virtue of having modeled who does evacuate, we've essentially modeled who doesn't evacuate. So we want to zoom into the urban area, look at the demographics again, knowing who's less likely to evacuate, and then at the census tract level, provide that information to the urban planners so that they can find those vulnerable populations and develop contingency plans. And then we want to develop some state-specific versions as well so that that can incorporate some of those modeling components that we're not able to do at the national level. And that's it.